How much of your day do you spend consuming art? Might be more than you think. Time spent watching Netflix, listening to music on Spotify or the radio, reading a book or a piece of writing online, looking at Instagram, it's made possible by the artists creating the content. In addition to making that content, they had to do a lot of self-promotion and branding and marketing to get us to look at it. Yet for us, art has never been cheaper. Most of us aren't paying for much of our daily art. So what does that mean for the creators out there? William Derezowitz is a former professor of English at Yale. His writing has appeared in The Atlantic, The New York Times, and many other publications. He's the author of several books. His newest one is called The Death of the Artist, How Creators Are Struggling to Survive in the Age of Billionaires and Big Tech. Bill, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks. Thanks for having me back.
You lay out in the book two dueling theories about what digital technology is meant for artists, one you agree with, one you don't. Let's start with the one you don't, this sort of positive idea. You say it's the Silicon Valley model. Hey, the digital world has made it easier for artists to get out there, get exposure, and make a name for themselves. What's wrong with that idea?
Right. This is the line that's pushed by Silicon Valley and others who sort of align themselves with Silicon Valley. And it's anytime you hear the word creativity, you're probably in the presence of this story, which is there's never been a better time to be an artist. Because it's easy to make your stuff, the tools are cheap or free, and then you can put your stuff online. And that's true. It's true as far as that goes. The question becomes, first of all, how many people really are going to see your stuff? The answer is probably very few or none, unless you do a ton of self-promotion, self-marketing. It can be virtually a full-time job just to do that aspect of it. And also, how are you going to get paid for this? I mean, if we're talking about just people as amateurs wanting to create stuff and put it out there, good, God bless them. My concern in the book, and all of our concerns, needs to be how do serious, full-time working artists manage to support themselves in a world where, as you said in your intro, so much of the art we consume now is either free or much cheaper than it used to be, music being the obvious example.
You went and talked to a bunch of artists in various kind of genres, painting and music and beyond. What did you hear from them about what life is like trying to make it purely being a creator of art?
Right. So I went into this book with a question, right? I knew the Silicon Valley story was wrong for the reasons I just said, but I also knew that somehow people were still managing to make art and even managing to survive in some way as artists. And like you said, that means musicians, writers, people who do visual art, people who make film and television. I cover them all in the book. What was their situation? How were they doing it? And how were they managing to get by? So I interviewed a lot of people, well over 100 people. And one thing I found out is that everybody has a different story, right? I mean, this is part of what it means to be an artist, is that you have to make up your way of making a living in your own individual way from the many opportunities that present themselves. The second thing I found was that, yeah, it is really tough for people. I mean, some people are doing better than others. But I would say that before the internet came along, if you were a serious, full-time, let's say, professional artist who had got enough success that you were recognized, you know, not very widely, but just like you know, your peers, critics, audiences felt that you were good. That was a middle-class job description, a middle-class standard of living. Since the internet came along and shifted so much of the money away from creators to the big tech platforms, it's now become a working-class job description. And we know what it means to be working class in this country in the 21st century. It means that you're poor.
People might look at this and say, well, hold on, art has always been a tough gig to break into, and we've had starving artists who still did great work, and maybe they didn't even care that much about money. So are things really that different today?
Right. Thanks for raising that, because I confront that argument right at the beginning of the book. Yes, there have always been struggling artists. Generally speaking, that meant young people who were just starting out, people who, quite frankly, weren't very good and probably shouldn't have been doing it. There's never been any shortage of those. Maybe, you know, we have these idea of like Van Gogh, who was never recognized. That's a very old thing. I think it's very hard to point to artists that we would say are good in the last 50 or even 100 years who never achieved any kind of recognition or standard of living. The truth is that while art has never been an easy gig. It's gotten much, much harder than it used to be for the reasons that I outlined and for other reasons as well. And we can't just sort of wash our hands and say, well, it's always tough. Like, the tougher it gets, okay, the less money there is in the arts, the more it and people will still make it. But it's increasingly going to be a rich kid's game. The arts, because they've always been tough, have already skewed, even before the internet, they already skewed affluent in terms of family background. Now everything that I learned tells me that it's more and more and more so. So basically, if we care about hearing everybody's voices, and especially now that we're talking about diversity, if we care about those things, we need to care about economics. We need to make sure that artists can actually support themselves, at least at some kind of basic level of decency.
We're talking to William DeResiewicz. His new book is called The Death of the Artist, How Creators Are Struggling to Survive in the Age of Billionaires and Big Tech. Now, I imagine more people who consume art and entertainment are listening right now than produce, though we've got a lot of creative types out there listening, I'm sure. What would you say to the consumers who might just see this free flow of online streaming stuff and feel pretty good about it, but when they hear this, say, yeah, I would like to help, you know, support artists out there?
Right. So let me just say, right, we know that there's fast food, and we have a sense now of, you know, how bad fast food is for us, but also for the people who make it. And people have been talking about fast fashion, you know, cheap clothing that's produced in places like Vietnam. And we've started to think about what that means for those workers. Now we have fast art, and we need to think about what that means for those workers. I think a lot of the solutions need to be more systemic, like we need to tackle big tech and its monopoly powers. As an individual person, listen, it's not that hard to think of ways that you can help. You can actually pay for that music. You can, when you buy a book, buy it new if you can. Don't buy it from Amazon. Buy it from someone. Make sure that the creator gets a piece of that and a decent piece of that. And then there's also, you know, one of the big models that's come along now that is helping is crowdfunding, specifically platforms like Kickstarter and Patreon, where people can go and support their favorite artists. It can be just for a few dollars at a time. That's a really important piece of it for sort of those younger or mid-tier artists now. So those are a bunch of different ideas for people.
In talking to a lot of the artistic creators you write about, and I see this online a lot too, the art that they produce ends up consuming less of their time because they have to hustle so much in all these other ways that you write about in the book to publicize, to network, things like that. What do we lose if artists have to spend so much of their time doing all that other stuff?
Well, look, I mean, we lose the art that they could have been making instead of doing the hustle. The example I give, and this has to do with the way that music, we recorded music now, we get for free, so musicians tour more and more. And I point out that if you look at sort of the big acts from the 70s, people like Bowie or Queen, they were producing like an album a year. Now if you look at, you know, even Beyonce just has a new album, or Lady Gaga, they may produce every 3 years, and that's partly because so much of their time has to go into touring, which is how they make a living, and it's also how they promote themselves. So that's basically, it's kind of an invisible, I would say the same thing about piracy. You know, when you pirate an independent movie, as many people do, what you're losing is the movie that can't get made. It's like the next movie that person might have been able to make if their existing movie had produced a decent amount of income. They're not going to be able to finance their next movie.
Do you feel hopeful about the prospects for the structural changes that you're looking for and the way especially big technology kind of controls the playing field here?
You know, I'm not going to say that I feel hopeful, and I think we need to not indulge in false hope, including the false hope that the pandemic, quote unquote, will change everything. I mean, things will change with a great deal of effort. Now, one of the things that really needs to change in the arts economy is that these big tech platforms, which have enormous amounts of power to drive down the price, say, of books, in the case of Amazon, to allow piracy on their sites like YouTube, which is owned by Google, which drives down the price of music, they have that power because they are themselves so large and powerful. So breaking up the big tech monopolies, which we've started to talk about doing, would be a big help. At the same time, those tech monopolies, as I'm sure you and your listeners know, are only getting much, much more powerful because of the pandemic, right? I mean, just in the last few months, they're like 30% bigger already. So I'm not hopeful, but I do hope that we gather the political will to address the distortions in the arts economy and in the whole economy that have been produced by the rise of these incredibly powerful companies.
As we wrap up, Bill, what do we lose if we don't restore the ability of these artists to make a living doing art?
Right. Well, let me go. I mean, I talked about the art that's missing when artists, you know, have to self-promote or self-market or just do a day job more than even before. But there's another piece to it, right? I mean, you talked before about, you know, did artists, they didn't used to think about money. Well, artists don't want to think about money. They only think about money because they have to think about money. We've created a world where artists more than ever have to be fully immersed in the market, and they have to constantly worry about whether what they make sells, right? Because the cost of living has gone up, and it's so hard to get to make anything even from what you do sell. So we're also losing that kind of world in which the artist isn't always looking over their shoulder about how do I please the audience? You know, what's the thing that's going to be the most saleable? How do I just follow my vision and develop my vision in a way that's going to create art that's exciting, that's new, that's experimental, that really, you know, to use the cliche, changes the world? We don't want art to become a kind of a branch of the marketing industry, let's say.
Bill, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks very much for having me on.
That's William Derezowitz, former professor of English at Yale. We've been talking about his latest book. It's called The Death of the Artist: How Creators Are Struggling to Survive in the Age of Billionaires and Big Tech.